to you. And so far, we've been studying about all these judgments. We talked about Peter and his way of life, his failing as a child of God in the midst of a worldly world, and earthling. What's an earthling, you know, spiritually speaking? How would you define an earthling?
An earth what?
An earthling. An earthling. An earthling.
Earthling, like us?
Like us.
Oh, earthling.
People that are, they can only inhabit in the earth, I would imagine.
Yeah.
They can
and
breathe.
Spiritual and matters in the spirit definition would be people that are saved and believers in God, but they're still earthly. Earthly in practice, behavior, in thinking, you know, not altogether spiritual, spiritually minded. Okay? Because like I said before, we live in the world, but we're not of it, you know. And we're supposed to think like if you live in an environment of the kingdom of God. Because like God says, let thy will be done on earth as it's being done in heaven. And that speaks volumes, because we are supposed to be representing a kingdom life, to show people how you live within the realm of God's kingdom. And that puts you in a very, in a stage life. Spectacles. Paul uses that word. We are spectacles. And that he's talking about the Roman theaters. When they go out there, they're performing and they're being seen by many. So Paul used that theater concept to say that we are a theater in the world. We're being scrutinized by the world. They're looking at us like if though we're on a stage performing. So it's very important how we conduct ourselves on the stage. Because what happens with these actors, they do their best to do their part, you know, and pretend the character that they're playing, you know, they study hard, they work hard, and a lot of these actors, they learn about the character of that person, and they try to mimic that person because it's like a true story about a person's life. And the voice and the behavior and the thinking and the expressions, they try to mimic that. Well, we're supposed to be doing that, mimicking, and God is the one we're trying to portray. He's the one we're trying to portray. Showing forth His goodness, His kindness, His love, His mercy, His compassion. So we are on the stage trying to show forth to the world who God is. Because through mankind is how God becomes known to this world. Besides the other two forms or three forms that Jim taught us about, you know, how does God reveal Himself to us. Besides those three, our walk and our talk and our life is supposed to really shine forth like Moses was when he came off that mountain, man. And we do the best we can, you know, under sometimes some very serious circumstances, you know, that we go through. And yet we try to show forth God even in those particular moments in time. People don't understand us when we suffer gracefully, when the people say, why you put up with that kind of stuff? Man, I would have, you know, knocked that guy out, or, you know, I said, well, I don't fight that way. No, we don't act that way. God tells us we're supposed to love our enemies. Sometimes that's pretty hard, ain't it? And love our enemies. You know, it's much easier to love, but it doesn't mean that you put your guard down. Sometimes you gotta love from a distance, huh? Sometimes you gotta love from a distance. And I know that all too well. I have people that I love, but they won't have nothing to do with me. That's fine. That doesn't deter me from loving them. It's just too bad that I can't express my love to them. And they don't know what they're missing, you know? But anyhow, that's something that we're all working on. It's trying to be like the Lord, trying to mimic him in any way that we can. And obviously, we're talking about a man that was doing the complete opposite. Mr. Lot. Man, you know, he didn't show forth the image of God, you know, in every aspect of his life. You know, he was not ruling his home with authority. He was not ruling his home. And that's that word I read to you, in and kara, and the word meaning house law. Remember that one word? He's not ruling his house well. And I think I wrote somewhere, no rule or authority in this house. And in 1 Corinthians, it talks about an order of things, doesn't it? Let's go to 1 Corinthians 11 to see what kind of ruling of the home the Bible teaches us. 2 Corinthians 11.
Second or first?
1 Corinthians.
Okay.
1 Corinthians 11. Starting in verse 1. What is the title on your Bible? Do they have a title on that?
Christian order.
Christian order.
Christian order. Okay. Okay. Christian order. In this case, there's a lot of Christian disorder. Christian disorder. Okay, it says, be imitators of me, just as also I am of Christ. Now I praise you because you remembered me in everything and hold firm, okay, the traditions. Okay, what traditions is this talking about?
The doctrines?
This is actually God's true word. Okay, but in other context, when you use the word tradition, but he makes it very clear, traditions of men. Okay, but right here he's talking about the traditions, the instructions that Paul has given this church. Okay, that's what he's talking about, their tradition. Just as I have delivered them to you. When you go to Jude, when it talks about the faith, one delivered, he's talking about that one. But I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man, and the man is the head of every woman. Boy, women don't like that one, do they? But when you put it in perspective, it's a beautiful picture, brother. When the man is in his place and is following the spiritual leadership of God, I mean, any woman wouldn't mind being under that kind of headship. But we got a lot of men that are tyrants. They want to rule like this, you know. And then the same thing with the women. You know, a woman has a position in the home that is a glorious position. And when they're married, what are some of the things that's going to gain her crown in eternity future? What is that? That word is used, and when you read Ephesians about the church in chapter 5 and verses 24, 26 all the way through, there's a word there. So how does a woman gain her crown as a married woman?
Well, I don't know what the word is, but isn't it through the serving of her husband?
Well, you got the right thing, but there's a word for that.
Submission.
What do they call that?
Submission.
Submission.
Yeah.
Submission.
Under the tongue?
No,
I'm just joking.
You know, you can still do it too, that easy. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. You know? They're like, oh, sitting back there, when cats would run across the street, you know, they used to play a game, they run in front of the car, you know, and he said, well, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Hey, I get a kick out of that guy. But see, that is the woman's crown. It's being a submissive to her husband. It's wonderful when the husband is submissive to his head. That makes it very, very nice.
Well, like Estella, you know, she was a submission to her husband,
yeah.
And but she didn't make it look like she was like a servant or a slave or anything like that. I never seen her as being a in that kind of a category where she's beneath her husband. You know, she made her position look really good, yeah. You know.
She loved that man for one. That was the ultimate motivating factor with this woman. Mm-hmm. She loved him in spite of him. Greg was a pretty good man. Mm-hmm. But every man has their flaws. Okay? And Greg was raised in a very strict home. And he understood his position as a husband, as a provider, you know, and he'd done all those things very well. Okay? He never denied her anything that she asked of him, never. But he was lost. It took her, what, 12 years?
No.
Around 12 years, just being submissive to her husband. He says, to me, Ray, to be submissive to my husband, it was easy. Because I loved him. Mm-hmm. I simply just loved the man. My daughter sometimes didn't understand that. Because sometimes they think, because the way he talked to me, and this, but I know him. I know him. Just like sometimes he'll say, woman, give me a cup of coffee. To the daughter, man, they had a problem with that.
They had a problem when he was whistling.
Huh?
They had a problem when he whistled.
Yeah.
The daughter. Uh-huh. Whistled
in his hand. Instead of a come, but she never took it offensively.
No.
That's just him. And like I said, love overruled a multitude of sin. Yeah. I sat in that living room, Ethan Hurst talked to one of her daughters, one of the twin daughters, you know, and Greg had called her, you know, in a certain manner. She said, why do you do that? Why do you let him do that to you, this and this and that, you know? He says, twin, do you understand what love means? I don't take that offensively. He's not doing that to disrespect me. It's how everybody else wants to perceive it. But no. When I call him, I call him Pops.
Yeah.
Hey, Pops, I need you to do something for me. Can people take that offensively? People are nuts. It's just the way people evaluate things, and they don't evaluate them correctly. When the person is trying to tell you, I love him. I love him. And eventually they get it, and I say, well, she must really love him. Well, 12 years in the making and submitting it to Greg, and it wasn't a monumental task for her. He didn't make it difficult. He never prevented her from going to church. Every once in a while, he says, on a Sunday, can we go somewhere for ourselves? And that's when I think Jim advised Stella. I said, there's nothing wrong with that, Stella. Go somewhere with your husband Sunday. Go for that ride he wants to go on and just be a wife. And he did. And she did. Because she felt that she had to be in church. So Jim kind of freed her. I said, no, you're free to do that. He's your husband. He doesn't prevent you from coming. He just once in a while, he likes to go on a Sunday drive somewhere and with his wife, you know. And she, after that, she would do it on and off, you know, but she never made it a habit. But it wasn't a monumental task for her to be submissive to him because he made it fairly easy because he never, and she would pay her tithe, you know. He never made no noise about it, you know. So eventually he came to know the Lord because of her submissiveness. It paid off. It paid off. That was the greatest day in her life. And I've heard the whole story many times, you know. Okay, so the head of every man is, Christ is the head of every man, and the man is the head of the woman. And God is the head of Christ. Every man who has something on his head while praying or prophesying disgraces his head. And who is the man's head again?
Christ.
Christ is his head. When he has his head, what do you say? Every man who has something on his head while praying, this is all, metaphorically speaking, you know, there's another word I want to try to teach something. So whatever it is by a man having his head off, that's not referring to not having a hat on.
No.
But we got that idea that it's disrespectful for you to walk into the house with a hat on. Or sit at the table, for that matter, with a hat on. Okay, just out of respect. There's nothing sinful about it. It's just a cultural thing, you know. In fact, I heard that today. Did you hear what your mom said about that guy that was sitting next behind us? with that big cowboy hat on, he was eating.
No, she was talking Spanish, so I didn't catch what she was saying.
Yeah, she told me in Spanish. He says, that man needs to understand that you don't sit at the table with that big hat he's got on. And he had a big Texan hat. Oh. You know, because I walked in, it was huge, you know. And he's kind of a big guy. I told him, well, I'm sure not going to go tell him.
You go tell him.
She's a Texan, you know. She said, that's disrespectful. But it's not a condemning thing. So this is not talking about a literal hat, okay? Just like some of our churches, women can't wear pants. You got to wear a dress. And they go to seed on that one, boy.
Well, even in our churches, Wasco did that, didn't they?
Yeah, with a girl that came in one day with pants, and she apologized to the church that she didn't have a dress ready, and she was in a hurry. So she came and she just apologized and asked the church to forgive her for coming in pants. I look at that, I said, well, what do you do? Okay, of course, she's under that idea that she was sinning against God. That's not freedom. No, it's not.
This thing here, it says where the man has something on his head. What is that talking about?
Well,
because I've always understood it that if he had something on his head other than Christ, but then what's that other than Christ?
That's one of the main things, that you know, God is not ruling over him; he's ruling on his own.
So, he's on his own, or does he have like an addiction ruling over him?
He's running his own authority, so to speak.
He's not having
God is his head and his authority.
But he's not a spiritual head.
He's not being in the spiritual position that he should be. Right. He's not in his place.
Well, it says he's got something on his head. So what's that referring to, though? What is that, you know?
Well, the only thing I can think of is a disgrace to God, because he's doing something and he's not taking his... Remember Moses and his wife? What happened there?
Was it the circumcision?
Yeah, remember what? Yeah. Who?
He was supposed to circumcise
his son. To circumcise when he got that circumcision law. He did not circumcise his son on the eighth day. Mm-hmm. And that was a death penalty on him. He disgraced the Lord by not doing as the head of the house to take that responsibility. And who's the one that did it?
His wife
had to go in, and that is a disgrace to him. He disgraced his head because he did not take on the responsibility as the man of the house. That's just one illustration I can give you, that he did not take his position. So that's what he's, you know, he's had his head uncovered. Okay, is that uncovered right?
Covered.
Someone who had his head, every man who has something on his head while praying or prophesying disgraces his head. So obviously he was not taking his position as the head of the home. Well, Lot was doing that very thing. He disgraced his head. And look what happened to him. He lost his wife. And the children, they went nuts, you know, because of what the daughters did. Okay? So he wasn't ruling his home. He was not taking his position. But sometimes the woman has to take the position. Remember Gibeon, I think it was? You know, when he was going to go to war, he wanted Deborah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she said, you got to come with me. And what did she tell him? If I go, the honor will be mine, not yours. It's not the woman's position to have to make these spiritual decisions of the home. It's the husband that's supposed to make these spiritual decisions and instructing the wife. But if he's not doing it, he's disgracing his head. A lot of times men don't take their spiritual leadership, so they're disgracing their head. Well, that's pretty much all I can tell you on that. You know, that example with Moses and his wife. She took the authority, and it was a disgrace to him. And God wasn't very pleased with Moses at that time. You know? He says, but every woman who has her head uncovered, okay, that word mean uncovered, that means to disgrace, while praying, or prophesying disgraces her head, for she is one and the same as the woman whose head is shaved. Uh-oh. I don't know, what does that mean?
Yeah, prostitute.
That's how bad it is. Because the woman's hair is her glory. Okay? But it's more to it than her hair being glorious. I mean, women look nice and pretty with long hair, you know? And that's the way it was back in the days of my days, and my mother and my aunts, they all had long hair, you know? That's just the way it was, you know?
Just like Art was talking about Christina, yeah. they cut her hair, and he's like, what happened?
I know. See, so the hair is a glorious thing in the physical sense, but it's talking more deeply than that. It's a crown on her, and it's talking about her character. But having a sweet and quiet spirit, a meek and quiet spirit, you know, and her appearance, she dressed modestly and discreetly. And those are the glorious character traits of a woman. Not only did she look presentable outside, but that she's presentable inside. And that's the most important part, that she has this meek and quiet, loving spirit, just like the virtuous woman was, you know. And that's a glory to her. But they use the hair as a metaphor, I guess, if I can use that word, to try to teach something different. But he's talking about the character of that woman. Because these women in Corinthians, they were trying to do something that they had no business doing. And that was what? Remember, there were the gifts of speaking in languages?
They were
trying to usurp the authority that they wanted to do what the men were doing. To speak in the language, and that was only strictly and only for men, only, that gift. And the women were trying to mimic it, and that's part of the subject when you get in, especially when you get into the 13th, 14th, and 15th chapter. That becomes an issue, that speaking the languages. The women wanted to do the same thing as the men. And if the men don't put their wives in their place, he said the women, the Bible said, if a woman wants to know anything, talk to your husband when you go home. It just seemed like they didn't have a right to ask questions in church. That's what it seemed like. Okay, but we, in our church, women ask questions and all that, you know, because they're inquisitive. But this was something different that the women were trying to do, and that's why he said women keep silent in the church. It's because they made reference to the speaking of the languages. And they were trying to do it themselves. And who is going to help them do that? The devil, Satan, prompting them on, trying to disrupt that church, and thinking the women have the ability to speak in this language, and they'll have no authority. But the husband not ruling well in his home, and his head's uncovered, he's disgracing the Lord by letting his wife do what she's going to do. And that's what the husband's supposed to be, ruling his home with authority, to keep his wife from, you know, going out of bounds. He's got to protect her. He's got to protect her. But the subject is what you have to say was on this one here. But there's a lot of application, you know, because I know they use this a lot to teach, you know, marriage, you know, counseling and stuff. They use this about headship and people being submissive to one another. Sometimes some women just don't want to be a submissiveness to their husband, even though the husband is being a pretty good a leader in his home. Sometimes they just have a problem with it. I don't know where it come from. If that's the way they were raised, you know, or a resentment, maybe that my dad used to run shot over my mother, and that ain't going to happen to me in my marriage, you know. I says, I got to say so here. Nobody ever said you didn't. Women have a say. And the men are supposed to let them have their say. And the men, all you do is correct it according to Scripture. And if there's no problem, then, hey, give her her head. Give her her head. You leave a woman alone, and she's responsible and all that, and she's going to do you well. She's going to serve you well. Don't try to dictate and rule her in that respect. Let her be her head in her home. And just the only responsibility I feel that I have, is to protect her from somebody trying to harm her, or somebody trying to teach her something that's contrary to Scripture. And so that's why I'm there, to be her instructor, just to protect her, not just to rush out over her or rule over her. No, I don't got to tell my wife anything about what she does. I may have a different way. I think it'd be faster if you do it this way, you know, but that's it. But I don't do that often either. I don't tell her how to cook and what to do, you know. I only tell her, you know, I have your water ready. But I don't do that often either, you know. I try, but it don't work. For a man ought not to have his head covered, since he is the image and the glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man. Okay? Adam, he was considered the what? What kind of head did he have?
Oh, the federal?
Federal head. But he was the federal head of all the human race. And look what happened when he failed. Look what happened. So the human race ran down the river. Now we're all born with those thinking, depraved nature. We can't go back on him, we know that. Okay? We cannot blame Adam. A lot of people don't understand that one. You say, even though we don't sin in the likeness of Adam, but we're sinners nonetheless. But him being the federal head of the whole human race, not only the human race, but the cosmos, the earth, the land, because of his failure to be in his position, and he left his domain, it affected the whole cosmos, the land, the earth, everything, because of what he did. And here we are. That's why we got all them weeds down there. That's why we have these forest fires, man, burning all these ungodly weeds that were never there in the original garden. I can imagine taking care of that garden. What do you think, man? You didn't have to have a hole or a pesticides or none of that, you know?
Walk around barefooted without stickers.
Yeah. You know, organic soil, if you put organic soil into the dirt, it doesn't allow weeds or anything to grow, because the organic matter in it overrules weeds and whatever. And I'm assuming that's probably what it had to go through. It never had to go there with a hula hoop and hula hoop weeds and all that. And I've seen that happen in my garden. I know when we first put that garden, remember we loaded up with all organic matter in it?
All those boxes?
Where the boxes were at?
Yeah.
Originally, before the boxes? I put all that, caught like $250 for that load, couple of loads of that, mixed it in, and we didn't do nothing with that ground for about a year. Weeds were growing all around it, but not there. Not there. So the earth was taking its care of itself. If there was any contaminants, it would overrule it, okay? But after that, the ground was cursed, and boy, we got weeds all over of all kinds, you know. Okay, let me just finish off here in verse 9. For indeed, man was not created for the woman's sake, but woman for the man's sake. Therefore, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels. You don't think the angels are watching us? Mm-hmm. I said it before. Jim said it before. Angels come and learn and want to know about this human experience. You know, just like a movie, you know, some movie guy was supposed to be an angel and he didn't understand emotions and tears. And he said, what's that coming out of your eye, you know? It's a tear. What's a tear? You know, because they don't understand that. Well, angels are always curious, because angels were there when God created the first man. And can you imagine what they were thinking when they saw that? And then when it came alive, and they said, man, what is that? Okay, he says, the authority in her head because of the angels. However, in the Lord, neither is a woman independent of a man, nor is a man independent of woman. Yes, that's right.
I don't understand.
See, the woman had her original beginning with who? Man. Because that's what woman means, out of men.
Yeah.
Out of men. But from that point on, every man has a beginning with her. Okay, the woman is the one that they come through now.
Mm-hmm.
That changed. So we're not independent of one another. And he said that, however, the Lord, neither is the woman independent of the man, nor the man independent of the woman. Okay, both of them had their beginnings from each other, but from that point after that, Eve is the one that became the mother of all living. Okay, so man can be talking, and if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't be here. So a woman can actually say that. My mother says, you know what, you could have never come into the world unless I brought you up. Since I brought you out, I'll take you out. I got that from Bill Cosby. But so it seems they're independent because they rely on each other. Now man has his beginning with a woman now. But originally the woman had a beginning from Adam. But what this is going on here, and the way I see this, in church capacity, the woman is no different in heirship. In church capacity, she's my equal right now. Equal. Not in the back, not in the side, equal in church capacity. Outside of church, she goes back to her submissive position as a wife to a husband. But in church, in heirship, she has that just as much as I do. And she can earn her right to be bright. Okay? So right now, we're on equal terms. I'm no better than her, and she's no better than me. And that's the way I see this. For as a woman originated from the man, so also the man had his beginning through the woman. See? Kind of explains it a little more. And all things originate from God. Judge for yourself. Is it proper for a woman to pray, okay, to God with her head uncovered? Okay? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him? As by nature, it's very odd for a man to have long hair. You know, just looking at it from a human standpoint, men have short hair and women have long hair. And it's been like that for a long, long time. But now, you can't even tell some of these guys that have long hair and women got short hair, so the roles are reversed, but that is not what's going to condemn them before God, and you have long hair or short hair. But it's a concept that he's trying to teach us here. Submissiveness. The woman is submissive to her husband, and the husband is submissive to Christ, and Christ is submissive to God. It's all an order of authority and position. Because there has to be order, don't you think? Somebody's got to be the head. I didn't ask to be the head. I didn't ask to be the man of the house. I don't know if I want to reverse roles, you know. I don't like washing dishes, and I don't like mopping, and I don't like all that stuff. But I didn't ask, but I'm a man, and I've been given responsibilities as a man in God. So I have to hold up my end, because whatever I do or don't do, I won't disgrace my head, and that is Christ. The church as a whole is the bride, and they're responsible to Christ being the head of the church. So he's trying to present her chaste, unblemished, without spots or wrinkles. And all that is just figurative language, you know. Not contaminated with sin and rebellion and backbiting and all that. That's not a chaste virgin, a virgin, you know. That's not a woman that you don't want to marry with that kind of behavior, you know. So God's going to be very selective to those and how they conduct themselves in the house of God as to what's going to determine their bridesmaidship. And it's very easy, brother. Always remember, love one another. There's where it all starts. You do that, you can't go wrong. How can you love and hate at the same time? How can you love and have animosity or resentment? How can you be hurt by somebody that says something offensive to you if you love them? And I'm sure Shala, there's been time, maybe Grace says something offensive, but she never took it into account. Oh, that's my husband. Sometimes he spits at the tongue. But I know deep down he didn't mean what he said. And that's the way she perceived it. Yeah. So just love one another, be there for one another, and you cannot go wrong. You don't have to be what you call a Bible theologian. You know, you don't have to be the greatest teacher or song leader. Just loving one another, because how does God say, how would they know with your mind? I'm just paraphrasing a little bit there. How would they know you from the rest of the world?
Knowing we're Christians by our love.
Yeah, because you love one another. That's how they distinguish you and the people in the world. People out there love with different motives and reasons. They love to get something back. They don't love unconditionally. They love conditionally. He said, man, don't you remember I did that for you and I did that for you and this and this and that? I said, then why did you do it? Is that the reason why you did it? Because you wanted something back in return? No, that's not the way we think. We do for people. I don't care if it's money you give out. You know, supposedly they're going to pay it back. If they don't, you write it off. That's what you do. That's what you do. The world doesn't understand that. In the world, they'll take you to court. You owe me some money. And well, we know what God says about when brother goes to law with brother. You know, he don't like that either. What happened to Moses when he saw those Jews beating up on each other? He was pretty upset, huh? He said, you guys are trying to kill each other? You guys are brothers. And you read that all through the Old Testament, how God feels about man going upon man or brother against brother. God resents that. How much more did he resent the fact when church members go against church members? And backbiting. Get on the phone right away, you know. God sees it all, you know. I don't know what's wrong with God people. Do you know God sees everything? God hears everything? He's not asleep. How we think sometimes we can pull the wool over God's eyes. But look at Lot. Did he think he was pulling the wool over God's eyes? But you know what he was doing? Did he know that he was doing a bad thing? Sure he did. Because the Bible said he was vexed day in and day out. And that vexed, it means also to be tormented. Who was, what do you think, maybe tormenting him?
The Holy Spirit.
Let me see something here. Where are you at? There's a word in here. Where are you at? Well, I thought you were on verse 8. There's a Greek word there. It means to rub it in. Where do you go, Roscoe? Maybe it's further back. I don't think it's that far back. But you know, there's a word in there that the people of Sodom and Gomorrah, it was kind of like rubbing on him, and giving him a hard time and tormenting him, just keeping him in check to make sure that you keep following this way of life. Okay? So he was being oppressed even from his own ungodly friends. Try to continue. And there's a word in there that they kept putting upon his mind to keep living that way in this lustful manner of behavior. And the world expects you to live like them. And if you start thinking about changing your mind, all of a sudden you want to get righteous and all that. And I had people, when I came to the Lord, he said, well, you don't have to change your life, man. I said, you know, my mother said, you don't have to stop drinking, you know. I said, so you go to church, but you don't have to stop drinking, you don't have to do this, you don't have to do that. The world tried to hang on to those that had fallen from following the Lord. When you get back on the world, man, they're going to rush out over you. And they're going to try to put your feet to the fire, man, and try to destroy anything that you represented before. For whatever reason, you left God. The world will do a number on you. They're going to try everything to keep their own. And the Bible says the world loves their own. Yeah. And it's sad when God's people go back into that mud, to that pig pen. Like the Bible said, it's like a dog returning back to his vomit. That's bad, brother. That is very bad. To turn your back after what God has done for you and for me, there should be a tremendous amount of fear in that. I was reading the word theology on a different theology book I had, and it was pretty interesting. What's the purpose of theology? I don't expect you to answer that, but we know what the word theology means, right? Theo meaning God, and ology meaning the study of God. It's a theology, what it does, it magnifies your understanding of who God is and how wonderful and how great and how powerful and how omnipotent, omnipotent that He is. And on the flip side, it shows you how insignificant you are. So when you study theology and study more about the in-depth of who God is, and you begin to realize how great and He is, that just tells you how insignificant you are. But in the eyes of God, we are significant to God, because we're becoming like Him. Be holy as I am holy. Okay? But theology is simply learning who God is and how powerful and wonderful He is and how merciful He is. You learn more about His character. Because we're going to learn until the day we die. And Jim brings out a lot of times a little deeper things about God and who He is and His character. And I said, man, I wrote down on my tabernacle map that I have, I wrote something like, the tabernacle is a scale model of how God planned the plan of redemption, the plan of grace, the plan of mercy, and the plan of reconciliation. In the beginning of that, well, I don't know what you're showing. So that's what I've seen. The more I study it, the more thoughts come in. What this whole scale model of this tabernacle is all about. And I've seen that. From the beginning of the gate to the end of the other gate, where the Holy of Holies, that there's a tremendous plan that God put all together there. And He done that way back in eternity. A scale model of the time and period that we're living in. And that was pretty neat. I said, man. But that's what theology means, almost in a nutshell. What time we got here? What time do we start?
We normally start at 6.
6 o'clock.
So it's going to be
8 o'clock. 8:15. Okay. Well, let me see. I'll finish it. I'll just go another 5 minutes though. I wrote down here, sin carries consequences. Okay, it's beginning. In reality, where does sin actually really begin? When did it come into the universe? Not so much within mankind. Where did it come in?
The angels rebellion.
Yeah. That was being in Isaiah 14 and 12. That was the first sign of sin and rebellion. Sin and rebellion. Yes, I wrote down here, we just read about 3 major events regarding sin and rebellion. What are the major reasons that God had to bring judgment upon men? Disobedience and opposing His authority. There's just one of two of many reasons what happened here. Pride arrogance, you know, but primarily being disobedient and opposing the authority of God, like if you could. But he tried it nonetheless. Well, man is testing it too. They test God every day by not accepting him as their personal Savior. They stand condemned before God while they live. Isn't that what Ephesians chapter 2, verse 1? And you were dead in your trespasses and sin in which you formerly walked, according to the course of this world. Well, Lot didn't heed that warning, because that verse of Scripture is talking about what it was at one time. And you're going back to that? Don't you remember when you walked in a state of disobedience towards God? Do you remember that? That brought you face to face with God, that you were undone before him. And now you're going to go in reverse? Yeah. So Ephesians chapter 2, verse 1 and 2, that's exactly what Lot is guilty of. He forgot. He forgot, and he's going back to this old depraved nature of doing things. You see, we have another time in history that is used as another example of these two acts of sin. 1 Corinthians 10, we'll just read a little bit on that one, and we'll continue with that one in thought next week or Sunday if Jen doesn't get back. 1 Corinthians 10, I'm already there. And starting in verse 1. Let's read that. He says, "For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud, and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized unto Moses," okay, "in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased. For they were laid low in the wilderness." What does that mean? Laid low.
Killed?
Dead.
My translation says their bodies were scattered over the desert.
Yeah, dead bodies.
They died in the desert.
At one time, I think it says in a year, it gives you a number here, or something like 22,000. Remember when they opposed Moses and they came down and the ground opened up? Well, that's what rebellion would do. You don't think God is serious when he gives warnings about going in a certain direction?
It might be of, what's that, Himalayas? What's that? Mount Everest.
Mount Everest. Okay,
people that have hiked up there, and there's dead bodies, you know, strewn here and there on the trail because they fell into a crevice. They can't even get them out because the helicopters, the wind, even people that have tried, they ended up dying there, and they can't even get to them. Yeah. So they just
bodies scattered all over that mountain.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, frozen in time.
Right, preserved.
Yeah, there's a lot of dead bones in that desert.
Yeah.
A lot of dead bodies laid low. Now these things happen as an example for us in 2017. Okay, happened to us as an example so that we would not crave evil things as they also craved. And do not be idolaters as some of them were. And we're talking about idolatry. It can come in many, many forms. Idolatry in the simplest form that I can put it is anything that you love more than God. Anything that gets in your way that's more important to you than God. You know, we all got to go to work, right? But some people live to go to work. 7 days a week, that's all they know. And sometimes not even for the money, just want to be there. Man, where does God get a chance in that person's life? Because they're so tied up in that thing. And there's so many things in the world that can divert us, take us away from it, that can use up a lot of our time and energy. You know, everything under the banner of fun. And I read something about fun. true religion is not all about creating fun. Serving the Lord is a very serious matter. But there's fun in the Lord when you stay on the right track. Okay, it's just a different kind of fun. But we live in a world with mega churches that are entertainers rather than transforming lives. But they do it in an entertaining way. So one guy said, well, it's fun, you know, it's fun being saved. But that's a worldly fun. Because we can make a slide of this church in a heartbeat. You just put your guard down and you start doing and incorporating this and incorporating that. Because I've had people ask me, I says, do you guys have a great youth group? Do you guys have like a baseball team and stuff like that? And I says, no, we don't have any of that. You know, we come to church, we come to learn and grow, and, you know, as churches, we go out sometimes, we go play baseball, and say, but that is a church, you know. That is part of the function of a church. It's no different than getting together with my brothers and my cousins to go to the park to have baseball games and have fun and barbecue, you know. That's just under the banner of having fun. But in the Lord's Word, is that, it sounds like, you know, well, you guys are no fun. I say, well, it depends how you define it. Ask Jesus about fun. Did he have fun? That poor man, he met up to opposition almost every day of his life. But he had fun doing what he knew what he had to do. And it was very important to him that he succeed. Because the whole human race was laying in the balance if he did not succeed. If he did not succeed. Imagine that one. Oh my goodness. He said, do not be idols as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and to drink and stood up to play. And we know what that's talking about, right? Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they were doing in Sodom and Gomorrah, man. Every morning they get up. And there's a word in there that talks about lust. That Greek word means to place upon the mind and keep on, in the imperfect tense, keep on putting it upon the mind. Keep on lusting and people promoting them in this lustful behavior. And love was a part of all that. Who cleaned up Sodom and Gomorrah?
Fire and brimstone.
Fire and brimstone.
Did Lot clean it up?
No.
Like I said last week, man, he was part of the problem. Mm-hmm. He was a lawyer, he was a judge. Didn't do anything about it. He never went out there and said, brother, this is unlawful for what you guys are doing. You know. He didn't want to ruffle no... When you're part of the elite, well, you don't want to ruffle no feather. If you're a Hollywooder out there, and you try to get conservative, man, you better hang on to your feet. They're going to come after you. So evil than people are sometimes. But I always try to be fair. Even within the Hollywooders, there's some pretty cool people in there that do believe in a conservative manner of mind. And some of them would like to come out more, like come out of their closets. And some do, like that one Chachi, I think it was. And he came out and he got slammed down all over the place.
Scott Baio.
Huh?
Scott Baio.
Yeah.
Chachi.
So you better be ready when you step out of that closet, especially in the midst of a democratic, liberal mindset. Man, they're going to run shot all over you. And that's what I'm talking about earlier, when Lot was in Sodom and Gomorrah. They're going to hold his feet to the fire. Don't you start getting religious too with us here, man. You've been living with us this way and going along and getting along. Now you're going to all of a sudden get all righteous on us? No. That's what it means, rubbing it in. Because that's what the Hollywooders, you know, you go in there, if you're a Christian, you're in there, you try to show any of your Christian behavior within that realm, they're going to come down on you like Sodom and Gomorrah would bring down on. But who cleaned it up? God did. Lot didn't clean up nothing. Okay? Nor let us try the Lord as some of them did, and were destroyed by the serpent. Okay? We remember that one, right? Nor grumble as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer. I would think this would be God. He's the only one that can destroy. He's the only one that can take you out. And he's the one that can really say, I brought you in, and I can take you out. I never thought about that. I gotta write that one down. So build a sermon around that one. He said, now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for the instructions upon whom the ends of the age have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed that he does not fall. He said, no temptation is overtaking you, but such it is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to endure it. I wrote something down here, and I'll close with that. I wrote here, the Lord knows how to deliver his people out of the mud or the pig pen, out of the wrong way. You can either walk out on your own, or the Lord will take you out. You can go out standing up, or you can go out in a coffin. Sometimes God will take you out. So he never specified, but he says God knows how to deliver his people out of a mess like that. Sometimes God has to take them out, period. They come out in a pine box. So you can either walk out on your own, and I wrote out here, when the trial was a lot, this was a forceful rescue. A forceful rescue. Okay? But we know that God can preserve us from temptation. So God had to drag him out of there. He's lucky God didn't kill him. Okay? But God got him out of there. And that's what he means, that God knows how to deliver his people out of that mess. But like I said, God had to put him in handcuffs and chains and drag him out of there. That's pretty sad. We go out, we talk to our brothers, they've gone out to the world, they're backslidden. You know, I think about Patsy, my sister there, and she's out in the world. And you're trying to get them out of that world and trying to get them back into serving the Lord for many reasons. And they just promise and promise and promise, and it's a no show, no show, no show. You stay out there long enough, like I said before, sin will take you further than you want to go. And it will cost you more than you are willing to pay. That's a dangerous place to be. When you get out of the edge and protection of God, you're on your own. You are on Satan's playground. And anything can happen. But God knows exactly what to do. And sad to say, sometimes it takes a life. Look at David. What happened to that little fellow? God took him home. God sees mercy and judgment. Both at the same time. Why? Because he did something he should have and brought a kid into this world and had no fault of what they did. So God took him home, you know. But David, being the man that he is, he accepted his punishment and went and moved on. Got up, washed his face, and said, well, he can't come to me, but I'm going to go to him. What a testimony, huh? Okay, brothers.